Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
This week's edition of Says You. We've chosen public radio as our forum, but perhaps we should expand the brand.
Richard, why don't we have a movie?
More to the power!
Because we are a sitcom.
You just throw a car chase in this?
Yeah, up to this point, I didn't think there was demand.
who's going to play Antonio Oliar? Wow. That's what I'd like to know. I think, what's his name? Antonio Banderas.
Antonio Banderas.
What do you think, Tony? Antonio Banderas? Huh?
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe film's the forum for our unique brand of academic precision.
13.
13. How did you come to 13?
I went up the numbers.
Yes.
I thought 14 was too many.
Right.
It had to be an odd number, so I went down one.
Says You's pitch for filmdom fame next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner says the next move is up to congressional Republicans in the negotiations to avert the automatic spending cuts and tax increases known as the fiscal cliff.
They're in a kind of a tough position now, and it's going to be, it's obviously a little hard for them now, and they're trying to figure out where they go next. And we might need to give them a little time to figure out where they go next.
Geithner speaking on Fox News Sunday this morning. He says the president is ready to make difficult concessions to reach a deal, but Republicans must first commit to higher tax rates on the rich and specify additional spending cuts. In Japan, officials say bodies have been discovered in the highway tunnel collapse in the eastern part of the country. John Matthews reports from Tokyo on the ongoing rescue efforts.
At 8 a.m. local time, more than 100 concrete slabs on the ceiling of the Sasago Tunnel just west of Tokyo collapsed, trapping several vehicles inside. Officials say at least three cars have been either crushed or set ablaze, adding that they pulled multiple bodies from a single van. With the accident on a major highway linking Tokyo to central Japan, transportation authorities are carrying out preventative emergency inspections to 12 more locations built similarly to the Sasago Tunnel. The collapsed section near Tokyo, carrying around 35,000 vehicles daily, will most likely be closed for Monday morning commuters. Emergency crews continue to search for survivors, saying more could be trapped inside. For NPR News, I'm John Matthews in Tokyo.
China says it's concerned, but it's calling for a calm response to North Korea's announcement this weekend that it plans to launch a long-range rocket. The Chinese Foreign Ministry says all sides should work for peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula. North Korea said this weekend it's planning to launch a satellite into space later this month. A similar attempt failed earlier this year. Egypt's highest court has suspended its work after a protest by Islamist supporters of President Mohamed Morsi prevented judges from attending a key meeting. The court had been set to rule on whether the Islamist-dominated assembly, which drew up a new draft constitution, was legitimate. The BBC's Bethany Bell is in Cairo.
The political standoff in Egypt continues. Early this morning, President Morsi's supporters started to gather outside the Constitutional Court in Cairo. They wanted to block any moves by the court that questioned the legitimacy of the assembly that wrote Egypt's draft constitution. And the pressure seems, for now, to have paid off. The court has issued a statement saying it's postponing its work indefinitely. Many Islamists are deeply suspicious of the court, which they see as being a vestige of the old regime of Hosni Mubarak.
The BBC's Bethany Bell reporting. Some 32 people now reported dead in a car bombing in Syria. The state news agency and activists say the car detonated near a mosque in central Homs province, a frequent battleground in Syria's civil war. And from Washington, this is NPR News. Afghan military and NATO officials say they beat back a group of Taliban attackers at a joint airbase in eastern Afghanistan this morning. The attack started when the vehicles of two suicide bombers detonated outside the entrance to the base. At least nine Taliban fighters reported dead and five Afghan troops and civilians. Israel says it's withholding this month's transfer of more than $100 million in tax revenues to the Palestinian Authority after the UN upgraded the Palestinian status last week. Israel Israel's finance minister says the money will instead be used to pay down the authority's debt to the Israeli Electric Corporation on Friday. Israel announced it would press ahead with plans to build thousands of settler homes. The issue of compulsory press regulation underpinned by law is a hot political issue in Britain. That was the main recommendation of the Lebson Inquiry into Press Ethics, sparked by the phone hacking scandal. Larry Miller reports that opposing forces are digging in. British Prime Minister David Cameron meets tomorrow with newspaper editors.
Prime Minister Cameron says he doesn't want new legislation that might one day be used to restrict freedom of the press, but victims of press intrusion are demanding the recommendations be accepted without change and organized a petition that's gained around 100,000 signatures in 2 days. The Labour opposition and the government's own coalition partner, the Liberal Democrats, echo that. However, the Civil Liberties advisor to Leveson says compulsory press regulation breaches human rights laws and is illegal, and that the press shouldn't be held to a higher standard than anyone else. Shami Chakrabarti, head of the group Liberty, says in a democracy, regulation of the press must be voluntary.
Larry Miller reporting. You're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business at Yeshiva University at cysimsfoundation.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Milwaukee comes from the good folks at Wisconsin Public Radio and the Pfister Hotel. On the web at Pfister.com. That's Pfister with a P-F.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. From the stage of the Helen Bader Concert Hall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He hasn't had enough cheese and chocolate and resents the fond du lac. Tony Khan. When asked if she'd journey to Milwaukee, she quickly responded, sure would, Francine Akbar. And he'd love a small place up past Oshkosh, where he'd fashion a rustic oak lair, Mr. Barry Nolan. Who's going to step up?
The big cheesehead, Tony.
Tony.
You be.
To my left, team two. She heard that America's first kindergarten was in Wisconsin, so she's not surprised that the state's known for brats. Carolyn Fay Fox. She's concerned that there's trolls in Mount Oreb and loons all over the place. Paula Lyons. And he's disappointed he missed the state cow chip tossing contest because nobody can throw the bowl like Mr. Arnold Raceman. Okay, who's the leader?
I will be your captain.
Carolyn will step up. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with another round of our new category titled, You're So Smart. Carolyn?
Mm-hmm.
You're So Smart? I love you a bushel and a peck. How many quarts is that?
Oh, jeez.
How many?
There's one Gregory per peck. So there's...
How many quarts in a bushel and a peck?
Okay, why don't we just admit we don't have any idea that was taught in the fourth grade or something.
Can't we just talk about
13.
Cheese curds?
13. How did you come to 13?
I went up the numbers.
Yes.
I thought 14 was too many.
Right.
It had to be an odd number, so I went down one.
I know, it's not even remotely close, but that's all right.
Oh, okay.
Well, we're talking about dry quartz, right? Not liquid quartz.
Hold on a minute.
Well, that actually has a lot to do with the answer. But I want to turn. This is a farming area, and I want to turn. Ladies and gentlemen, how many quarts in a peck?
Milwaukee's a farming area?
How many quarts in a peck?
I think so.
Seemed like a city to me.
Yeah.
How many quarts in a peck? Anybody know?
Nobody goes into a tavern and orders a peck of anything.
Nobody orders a bushel of frozen custard.
Right.
Well, I can't give you any points for this. The correct and incorrect answer is 40.
40?
Yes.
40.
There are 8 quarts in a peck. There are 4 pecks in a bushel, so there's 32 quarts in a bushel plus 8 is 40. However, that's a dry measure of tightly packed things like corn and peas. What if you got green beans?
Or apples.
And things that, that aren't really shaped. So that can go up to as many as 9.3 quarts per peck. So I would have accepted any answer between 40 and 46.
This is a question. In other words, it's a question without an answer.
That's right. So because it had no answer, what do you think? 2 points?
For what?
For what? You didn't do anything.
For showing up. I think that's enough. We're here, 2 points.
You know, they came a long way. Give them 2 points. What do you think? So we'll give them 2 points. Tony, you're so smart. What's the buttered cat paradox?
I'm sorry, the buttered cat paradox?
The buttered cat you know this?
This one I know.
The buttered cat paradox, that there's an opposite to it.
I mean,
you make an assumption about a buttered cat, which obviously isn't true. Now,
what assumption can you make about a cat from legend?
It hates water.
9 lives.
Those are all good guesses.
They can't be herded.
Carolyn, give them 1 fact about a cat they should know.
It lands on its feet.
It always lands on its feet.
So if you butter a cat, does it land on the buttered side or on the on the cat side?
It's the buttered toast thing.
Yes.
Buttered toast always lands butter side down.
Right.
So a buttered cat, if you really want to ensure the well-being of your cat, butter its feet before you drop it.
Or if you put butter on its back, which way is it going to fall?
Then you have a 50-50 chance.
There's your paradox.
You know something? That is exactly the buttered cat paradox. Very good. We led you there.
Let me just say that the editing of this program will show that we reached that conclusion in about 3 seconds.
They got the second part of it. Give them 5 points, and we'll be very generous to you guys on the next one.
Sure.
But, the paradox is that cats always land on their feet, and buttered toast always lands buttered side down. So the paradox, what would happen if you put a piece of buttered toast, butter side up, on the back of a cat, and then drop the cat from a large height? Scientists maintain...
Did somebody get a grant for this?
Yes.
You've heard the
that the experiment would produce an anti-gravity effect where the... Where the cat falls, as the cat falls toward the ground, it slows, starts to rotate, and eventually stabilizes, hovering a short distance off the ground while rotating at a very high speed. I don't know that this is true, but I love the image so much. All right, we'll be real generous to you on this one, Arnie.
Sure.
You're so smart. We often use the term present day, but technically speaking, exactly when is the present, and why do we need to have an exact date for it?
And why do we need to exactly what?
An exact
and why do we need
it.
To have an exact date for
There's
it?
There's a reason. It's a legal reason?
It is not legal. It is, in fact, scientific.
It's a scientific reason for having the word present day.
My wife oohed when she heard this answer, so I think maybe we're...
Well, I'll be right next to her booing any second now. I haven't a clue.
Well, let me give you a hint then. The present is 1950.
Oh,
why would that date have some significance?
The atomic clock.
The atomic clock.
Not the atomic clock.
The atomic bomb.
Yes.
No, it's afterwards.
Yes, and why is the atomic bomb so important to this?
You're really getting there. You're getting the 5 points
because
that they just
got. Because after
it
was invented, everything changed.
Well,
that's true, but not.
I don't know. I mean, the atom was split before then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'm going to go to the other side. Does the other? You get your 5 points for that. They get 5 points. Any thoughts on the other side?
So if it has to do with the atomic bomb, the fission bomb had been invented in the early 40s. The fusion bomb would have been invented about 50.
Yeah, but that's not there. I'm going to go to the audience. Anybody want to take a shot at this?
Doomsday. Well, I'm saying
you know what it is? It's radiocarbon dating.
What?
Radiocarbon dating. Oh, you guessed it up there? And you're in the balcony. This is excellent. The balcony got it. It is
radiocarbon dating.
Radiocarbon dating began in that era, but what was most important was before atmospheric testing, it was much more accurate. After atmospheric testing, amount of carbon-14 in the atmosphere greatly complicated radiocarbon dating. So they had to have a frame of reference, and they took the frame of reference as 1950.
They didn't let me start dating till 56. So.
What are we supposed to do
with
that?
Where are you getting these questions?
And I really should have waited till 58.
Yeah, that's try this one, Francine. You're so smart. When does a house become a mansion?
When you have to repair it.
And it's paid for.
Yes.
Right, the day the contractor shows up.
Yeah.
Let's see. If it goes over...
Just a staircase front and back.
4,500 square feet and 8 bathrooms.
Well, I'd call that a mansion, but they don't, actually. That's not... take a guess. Take a shot at it.
So, 5,000 square feet and 5 bedrooms.
No, it's not bedrooms and bathrooms that are the difference here.
Oh, no, maybe it's 3-car garage, 4-car garage.
No. It is about a modern day... it's about size. It's really about size. You were too small, but about size.
10,000?
6,000.
No, it's actually 8.
8?
Eight realtors.
8,000
square feet. I think this might depend what part of the country you're in.
Well, the National Realty Association says 8,000 square feet determines a mansion. So you get 5 points for knowing it was size. Anybody else on the other 8, side?
Square she feet? Had a good answer.
What?
I thought more than one staircase, a front staircase and a back staircase.
Oh, that's a wonderful answer. It's not what we have here, but that's a great answer. Anyone else want to take a shot in the audience?
Ballroom.
Exactly.
Ballroom.
A ballroom.
A ballroom it in is... the bathroom.
Oh, I said that. I said that. Yeah.
8,000 square feet is a lot of...
Yeah.
I would like to just hold on a minute here about the ballroom.
Yes.
Because are you talking about a modern mansion? Or an old-time mansion, because people are all about media rooms and private theaters these days, not ballrooms.
May I address that question?
I wish you would.
Okay. Today's realtors call it 8,000 square feet. That's what makes a mansion. But classically, it was determined by rooms dedicated to entertainment.
Yeah.
Ballrooms, musical libraries, extended parlors, and now theaters and that type of thing. And that's what determined a mansion was the rooms dedicated to entertainment.
All right.
Did you give them 5 points for that? Yeah, that's about right. Try this. Thank you, Eric.
Did you give us 5 points?
All right. Paula, you're so smart. Why is it called a polka?
Why is it called a polka?
Oh, wow, and it has nothing to do with dots, does it?
No, it has absolutely nothing. Nothing to
why
do with dots.
Why is it called a polka?
I think...
Does it have a Polish origin?
It absolutely does.
Does it have,
10 points. Very good, but can you elaborate on that?
It means Polish.
I was a little quick with the bell. Can you elaborate on that?
I really... don't know too much about the history of it, but I've always associated it with both German and Polish culture.
Well, Polish
and
national
I
dance.
I don't know why.
That's very good.
You're
and also,
elaborate.
But you know what it really is? It's Czech.
It's Czech
culture. The polka was originally folk music from Poland, but it comes from the Czech word polka, because evidently in Czechoslovakia in 1840, the Czechs went nuts for Polish folk music. And the Czech word for half step is polka.
Polka?
P-U-L-K-A. Ah. And that's what most people say it comes from. Although there are those that say it was a name made up, get this, by 19th century Bohemian Anna Slezak, who is deemed to be the mother of the polka. I
really?
Didn't know there was parentage. I'm glad I found that
the
out.
Mother the mother of the polka.
And finally, Barry, this is probably my favorite record in all of sports. And it is perhaps the most telling. The 1992 Dream Team, the U.S. Basketball Olympians, played 12 tournament and exhibition games against the finest competition in the world. 48 quarters of basketball, 500 minutes on the court, without ever doing what?
Making a free throw. They're Americans.
They're Americans. They can't make a free throw. No.
Without ever doing what? Without ever fouling out.
No, that's a great guess. That's a great
without
guess.
Ever
this is so telling of with, this
without
team.
Running without ever falling behind.
You know, I don't know if they ever fell behind like 2-0 or ever anything like that. I really can't answer that, but I don't think it's true.
Oh, I think that's right.
Oh, okay. Well, you got 7 points, so you're all right so far. But anybody else want to take a shot? 48 quarters of basketball, 500 minutes on the court without ever doing what?
A timeout.
That is exactly right.
Yeah, timeout.
You know, I always get those sports questions.
Good for you. Good for you. That is exactly right. 48 quarters of basketball, and not once did they ever call a timeout.
Wow.
That's a pretty telling record. And very good, Francine. Of all the people to get that, I did not expect it would come from you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Squeezettes. It is the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Tony, if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word CORF. C-O-R-F. CORF. Folks?
Of all the boys I've known and I've known some, until I first met you I was lonesome. Then you came inside, dear, my heart grew light. The world was new to me. You really swell, I have to admit you deserve expressions that really fit you. Oh, I rack my brain trying to explain things that you do to me. By mere beast of shame, please let me explain. By mere beast of shame means that you're grand.
There are so many ways to enjoy Says You. You can listen each week, as we hope you do. You can download a show if you miss it. You can attend a live performance. And now, there's the book, Says Us, the scripts and quips of Says You, Volumes 1 and 2, now available for gifts, for traveling, for holding open the back screen door for the dog. Information about all these items is available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Says You returns after this from home. the Squeezettes. That's Sarah Kozar, lead singer and accordion, Linda Mueller, accordion, Pamela Sesniak on accordion, Dave Bolliard on the drums, and Mike Shaltry on the tuba. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it. Would you help me take a moment and thank our scorekeepers? That's the fabulous Megan Watson on the right and the one and only Eric Anderson on the left. Thanks, guys. We have had a few moments with the word corf. We will go first to a smiling Carolyn Fox.
Oh, corf can be a verb, as in you corf when you throw up a little in your mouth. But that's really not the definition. It's a noun. A corf is a musical instrument with strings and keys that makes a distinctive chiming sound.
A musical instrument with strings and keys that makes a chiming sound. That's what it could be. That could be a corf. Of course, it could be something else. Mr. Reisman?
It's the sound my dog makes when he has a respiratory problem.
Yes,
it's corf. It's a basket or any structure that's got perforations on the top that allow you to carry seafood and keep it alive in the water. Lobsters, fish, so you can take it from one place to another.
So you could take the corf to the turf?
Yeah, a corf is what you carry fish in while it's still alive.
Oh, okay. You got a basket full of fish, it's actually a corf full of fish or lobsters or something like that?
Yeah.
That could be it. Or it could be something else. Paula, what say you?
Well, actually, a corf is a hidden compartment in a glove. It's designed as a place where you can hide a little money.
Hide a little money.
Money.
A hidden compartment in a glove. Take a little stash, put the mad money in the corf, you're good to go. It could be that. It could be the basket that hauls fish and lobsters. Or it could be the musical instrument with strings and keys that makes a chiming sound. It's one of those three, and the choice, Francine, falls to you.
I believe that I will be seeking the counsel of my partners here, because this answer is not readily apparent.
And it so often is.
I have to say the basket in the water.
I like the basket in the water.
I was going to say I didn't like the basket.
You don't know. Well, I don't believe the musical instrument, and as for the glove, well, I covered the O.J. Simpson trial.
You did, actually.
I heard a lot about gloves and never heard corf.
But I love the idea of being able to have something you can hide in a glove. I mean, it's entirely possible. Arnie, when you're carrying the fish in the basket, are you still in the water? You're kind of walking the fish as you're going along? I mean, why not just a net?
Hey, you're basket training
to be fish and
chips.
I understand the logic of that. You could be carrying along a cache of lobsters or something that needed to be kept alive. That makes sense, although I've never heard of it. No glove compartment, huh? Okay.
Well,
I like that.
That's the one I'm kind of partial to. But
a corf, the glove. You're partial to the glove compartment?
Yeah, right.
I go for basket, but
okay.
Okay,
I've been wrong before.
Okay, I'm going to go for the glove compartment.
Bless your heart.
Paula, the captain has stepped up and said she will go with the hidden compartment in a glove, maybe a little money there, something like that. Is that, in fact, what the corf is?
No.
It is not. 10 points for a successful bluff. Okay. All right, audience, your turn. What do you think? How many say the fish basket? How many say the stringed and keyed instrument? Wow. I don't know. That's pretty close. But someone up there was telling the truth. Who was it?
A basket? or cage-like structure with perforations on the top for keeping fish or lobsters alive in the water.
A big I told you so for Mr. Nolan. And 10 points for Paula's team.
This is a wonderful opportunity for anybody who wants to market a glove with a hidden compartment.
Yeah.
I think the idea is wide open.
Seem to have, yes. All right, let's go on to round three. Suggested by the fabulous Denise Perry of WILL Land in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, here's a new round of role reversal. I'll give you the names of five performers from a particular movie, from the smallest roles to the lead. The faster you can tell me the name of the movie, the more points you'll amass. Mm-hmm. An example from last time, we started with Danny DeVito.
Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
No, it went to, oh, good guess, went to Guy Pearce.
Oh, L.A. Confidential.
L.A. Confidential. Wow, good job, Arnie. You didn't need Kim Basinger, Russell Crowe, or Kevin Spacey.
But that's a sample question.
Yeah, that's
right.
A sample.
No 10
I'll
points
go home
for
now.
That.
Don't give up. They start hard, they end easy. Try and see what you can do. What movie are we referring to, Carolyn, starring Mary Nash?
Marion Nash?
Yes.
Marion?
Mary Nash.
Mary Nash.
Mary Nash. Okay, this is a woman.
Mary Nash.
Starring?
Actually, yes, really.
Star is Born.
No, not
starring?
It's a pretty big role. It's not starring, but it's a pretty big role.
Mary Nash.
I don't think they're going to get it. Okay. To Mary Nash add John Howard.
John Howard.
H-O-W-A-R-D. Giving you the
Howard.
Hardest one first.
John Howard.
Blanco.
Gaslight.
Oh, it's a wonderful guess, no. But incorrect. To Mary Nash and John Howard add Ruth Hussey.
Oh,
Hussey.
Not Philadelphia Story.
Yeah, the Philadelphia Story. Six
really?
Points.
Oh,
yeah, very nice, Arnie.
Wow.
Well, you didn't. Very good. Mary Nash is Mrs. Lord.
Oh, that's Mrs. Lord?
That's
Tracy
Mrs.
Lord's
Lord.
Mom.
A pretty big role. John Howard, of course, is...
George?
George.
Oh,
is
George, yes, who she doesn't end up marrying.
Right. And you didn't need James Stewart or Katharine Hepburn. Very Catherine good. It's Hepburn. The Philadelphia Story. All right, the first two are the hardest, but give it a shot, Tony.
So how many points do we get?
You got six.
Six, all right.
Give this one a shot, Tony. Angelica Houston.
Angelica, well, let's see. What was one of the very first movies that she was in? That mob thing?
Yeah. Is it the
Pritzi's
mob
Honor.
Pritzi's Honor?
Pritzi's Honor.
It is not Pritzi's Honor. To Angelica Houston add Jerry Orbach.
Jerry Orbach.
Oh. Would it be a Woody Allen film?
It would.
Yeah. I'm drawing a total blank. I have no idea. Oh, wait a second. It's a serious one. It's heartbreaking because Jerry Orbach does that to you.
Law and Order Cats.
Okay.
To Angelica Houston and Law and Order Cats. To Angelica Houston and Jerry Orbach add Alan Alda.
You can keep on like this, and I just...
Yeah, you're not going to...
I won't be able to remember the title. I see the movie.
You can't remember the title.
No,
could you give me a clue, and maybe I can help you?
It's a human emotion, I believe, is the title.
Yes, if I get to Angelica, Jerry Orbach, and Alan Alda, if I added Martin Landau, would that help?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I knew I was right. I just can't remember the name.
So I guess going to Mia Farrow just is worthless,
yeah, of
right?
Course.
Totally
she was
worthless.
In it too. She was right there at the top.
Totally worthless. I have to go to the other side.
Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Crimes, yeah, and, crimes misdemeanors. And Misdemeanors. Is that what you were trying to think of?
Of course it was.
Okay.
Oh, God.
I'm so
what
sorry.
What do I get for showing up?
Try this one, Arnie. And I'm not sure how this first name is pronounced, but I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Alice Krieg, K-R-I-G-E.
K-R-I-G-E?
Alice Krieg.
G-E?
Or Krieg, K-R-I-G-E.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
That's a good shot.
It's as good as any?
Yeah, never heard of her.
To Alice Krieg add Sir John Gielgud.
Oh. Arthur.
No, but it's a great guess. It's
a
good guess.
Too, yeah.
To Alice Krieg and Sir John Gielgud, add Ian Holm.
Ooh.
Okay. Are we talking Shakespeare?
We are not.
Spinal Tap.
No. Is Gielgud... I don't know. Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire is exactly right. 6 points. Yes.
Really?
Wow.
Wow.
You see the look on Paula's face when he got that? You didn't need you didn't need Ian Charleston or Ben Cross for Chariots of Fire. Very good. All right. Try this one, Francine. Timothy Spall, S-P-A-L-L. Timothy Spall.
HUD.
HUD.
I felt like saying it.
I think you're going to have to give us the next clue.
The next clue? You don't even want to take a wild stab?
No.
Not even a wild stab.
Nah.
To Timothy Spall, add Michael Gambone.
Michael who?
Gambone. Oh, is this one of those mob movies?
It is not.
No. It's
it's about as far from a mob movie as I can...
Oh, it's about Ham.
A romantic comedy.
Well, not that far.
Okay.
I don't think they're getting there. To Timothy Spall and Michael Gambon, add Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we in Merchant Ivory territory?
We are not in Merchant Ivory territory.
Is it Planet of the Apes remake?
Hold on. Is it one of those weird scissorhand guy things?
To Timothy Spall, Michael Gambon, and Helena Bonham Carter, add Jeffrey Rush.
Jeffrey Rush. Oh. Oh, is that a musical?
Oh, it's gonna... No, it is not a musical. Don't say it. Does the other side know? Okay. The other side knows.
Getting it.
And to Timothy Spall, Michael Gambon, Helena Bonham Carter, and Jeffrey Rush, add Colin Firth.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, it's the King's English. The King's Speech.
The King's Speech.
Yeah.
Yes,
King's
Speech.
The King talks.
Rush, what were we thinking, of course?
He finally got to the King's Speech. 2 points. 2 points for that.
Oh, God.
Who did Timothy Spall play?
All right, these last two are hard, but I'm going to give you, Paula, the harder one.
Oh, yum.
All right. Try this one. John C. Reilly.
Ooh, John C. Reilly. Wait a minute.
Chicago.
No, but a good guess.
No, I wasn't going to guess that, as a matter of fact.
Go ahead.
No, I can't think of the name of the one I wanted. Oh, never mind. Go.
Okay, to John C. Reilly, add Kevin Kline.
Kevin?
Kline.
Kline.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a comedy?
After a fashion.
After a fashion.
It's not Dave. It's not...
No, this is much harder than that.
Okay.
To John C. Reilly and Kevin Kline, add Meryl Streep.
Oh,
Meryl
so this
Streep.
Is Sophie's Choice?
No.
Not Sophie's Choice.
No, that's nothing near a comedy.
To John C. Reilly, Kevin Kline, and Meryl Streep, add Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin. Oh,
I got it.
The incredible, gigantic woman...
It is not. No, it is not. That started
the amazing,
incredible shrinking,
expanding. Oh,
you're going to get it on the last one, that's for sure.
Oh,
it's
wait
going
minute.
To be
wait
the one
minute.
With Dustin Hoffman. Is he going to be the last one?
No.
No.
To John C. Reilly, Kevin Kline, Meryl Streep, and Lily Tomlin, I'm going to add Garrison Keillor.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. They're Prairie Home Companion.
A Prairie Home Companion. 2 points. That's
Jeez.
What it is. I told you it was a hard one.
Well, that would be disloyal to go and see that movie. I never saw that movie.
2 points. A Prairie Home Companion. They get 2 points for that.
Yeah.
And finally, try this one. This is a tough one, Barry, but give it a shot. Austin Pendleton.
Well,
one of my favorite character actors.
A lot of films.
Austin Pendleton.
Is it a musical?
I'm going to take a fresh start on
that,
eh? Okay. Let's go on to the next one.
To Austin Pendleton, add Christopher Plummer.
Abbott and Costello Meet Dracula.
I'm so tempted to hit the bell, but no. To Austin Pendleton and Christopher Plummer, add Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer who?
Jennifer Connelly?
Yes.
The one about A Beautiful Mind?
A Beautiful Mind is exactly right.
Good for
6
you.
Points. Nice job, Francine.
Good for you.
Very good, you guys. Nice job on that round. 6 points for you, Francine. And let's go on to round 4, which is Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Arnie, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word callithump. C-A-L-L-I. T-H-U-M-P, callithump.
Artificial margarine.
Folks.
If I stick the moon so bright, yeah, that is the moon so bright. If I stick the lovely night, yeah, this is a lovely night. Lovely night, moon so bright, yeah, we fall in love tonight. On the banks of the Rhine, with your lips close to mine, my heart. My Sprechen Bass ist das. When you go, I feel so, I don't know. My Liebchen ist das Love.
When is Seju coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at sayu.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Briefly, Sayu pauses. Just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back. Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at sayu.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high quality copies available. That is the Squeezettes. Thanks, folks. We have had a few moments with the word callithump. We will go first to Tony Khan.
I think it's actually pronounced call it hump.
Okay.
Or call it whatever you like. It's a Shriners parade for kids. With prizes for costumes.
What?
So sorry, we didn't hear you.
A Shriners parade for kids with costumes. It could be that or something else. What do you say, Francine?
Callithump is a British children's game in which children play leapfrog in a chain.
They play the Pragen chains.
It's called Leapfrog or Else.
We know.
Leapfrog played in a chain. Okay. Right. You jump over and then the next and it goes on.
As opposed to franchises?
Good. As opposed to franchises.
Barry, what do you say to Calathump?
I actually have a Calathump. a month ago, I was playing tennis with my son and did something, I don't know what it was, to my knee, and I've had a bit of a limp ever since. A Calathump is an injury due to exercise. You may have heard the phrase, is that a Calathump or are you just sad to see me?
An injury caused by exercise?
Yes, sir.
An injury caused by exercise.
What are we thinking?
So a Calathump is either an injury due to exercise. Well, that could be a Calathump. It could also be a British children's game of leapfrog, or it could be a Shriners parade for kids with costumes. It's one of those three, and the choice, Arnie, is yours.
Well, I think if it were in the Shriners parade, it would be used in a show called Fez You. So you need to sing that.
So it's a parade of frogs that causes injuries.
Here they come again.
Calathump, we're supposed to imagine it's calisthenics related. Because it's an injury caused by exercise. I don't know, because this children's game of leapfrog in a chain, that's how you
leapfrog
play leapfrog.
Is a chain, isn't it?
That is.
I mean, how do you play leapfrog if you're not in a chain?
No.
Boy, he sure got you there,
this
didn't
game
he?
With one person in it. It's like, do that again. That's fine. Okay. What do you call that? I'm leapfrogging.
So what do you think? I mean,
it's clearly none of them.
You know, it's a lot Meryl funnier Street, when you don't know what he's talking about.
Do you guys have any ideas?
It isn't even possible to do a Freudian analysis on these
answers. Take a stab. Give me a vote.
I think we must have misheard all three and the three new ones.
Give me a vote. What do you say? I
have no clue. It's kind of like, close your eyes and go, I don't know.
You're not going to...
Pick one. Just pick one. Nobody's going to give you a hard time.
I'm going to go with Tony. Just to give Tony a chance to say, what are you talking about? We're going with Tony.
They're going to take a wild stab, Tony.
I think this is Fez You, yes.
This is nothing more than an absolute wild blind stab that Calathump is a Shriners parade for kid with costumes. Is that what it is?
If you cross off most of the letters here, what you actually get is HUD. But if you leave them all in, it's the Children's Mummers Parade with prizes for costumes.
Wow. That's exactly what it is.
And how you got that, I have no idea.
Wow. And so much for the educated parsing of words. The wild stab carries the day. Let's close tonight. Hall of Famer John Henderson of Lodi, New York, has been on the warpath lately with a whole bunch of what's the difference.
Oh.
Let's see how we do this week with John's category. Carolyn, what's the difference between audacity and temerity?
The difference between audacity and temerity. Let's see. There is no book by a president called The Temerity of Hope. How about that?
Audacity can be positive.
Audacity and temerity.
Audacity can be positive, do you think? And temerity is like temerity. The nerve of you. But
audacity is a little more negative in its connotation.
Yeah. I'm sorry, which is more negative?
Temerity.
Temerity is more negative in its connotation.
Yeah, you have the nerve to do something.
That's a how dare you.
Whereas audacity,
audacity is to be ambitious, to be
bright and fresh and bold.
Yeah,
you know something? Very well done, 10 points. That's exactly on. Both are boldness, but audacity implies a disregard or challenge to prudence, but temerity implies a contempt.
A contempt
of the danger.
If you come into Wisconsin with a pad of margarine in your pocket, that's temerity. If you stick it on your nose, that's audacity.
Tony, try this one. What's the difference between debauchery and perversion?
What?
I like to get the perversion first. You know, when I get a little tired, debauchery's okay. Perversion, I don't know. You know, it's like perversion you can do by yourself. Debauchery requires a close friend.
That's right. He's right.
Or in the words of Woody Allen, at least you don't have to look your best.
Or you know, perversion can come from the deep in the soul. Debauchery tends to come from below the belt.
I think debauchery.
Actually, they're both cheap perfumes.
Cheap perfumes.
Right. Debauchery is 50 cents cheaper.
You know the fastest way to put an end to this?
It could be.
10 points. Yes, that's exactly what it is. Nothing whatsoever. Anybody else want to give this a shot, or do we just let this one drift?
I thought Jerry's answer was perfect.
Yeah, I thought debauchery doesn't necessarily mean that it's evil, and perversion sort of...
It's excessive.
Yeah.
It's excessive.
It's...
Yeah, debauchery is
and
more
perversion
about
is
excess.
Against something. Perversion is undermining something.
Yes,
right?
I'm glad I gave you the 10 points.
Perversion
close
is,
enough.
Yeah.
Try this one, Arnie. What's the difference between cringe and cower?
Cringe and cower?
Mm-hmm.
Well, cower is that you really are fear, right? And to be afraid of something. Cringe is something that makes you disgust or scare or...
That has a lot to do with it, but this is really the distinction that John draws, and I know there are many distinctions, but the one he draws is physical.
Yes, cower is you hide. Like,
yeah, cower is you duck, you hide yourself, and cringe
is you pull back.
You pull back.
Cower is under the table.
Yes.
Cringe is just sort of shrinking into yourself.
You know what? 10 points. Nice job. Nice job. Both are reactions to fear, danger, or unpleasantness. To cringe is to contract the muscles of the body, almost involuntarily, whereas to cower is to squat, to bend over into a bent position to avoid something. So that's very good. Try this one, Francine. What's the difference between a militia and an army?
Militia smaller.
Not necessarily, but yes, in most cases.
How it's empowered, right? How it is empowered, like a militia can be made out of citizens.
A volunteer element is connected with militia.
Yes.
And
army you draft
so much with army.
Not so much indeed. 10 points, yeah. A militia. Citizens. Militia is citizens, composed of citizens who are not full-time professional soldiers, often recruited for a special purpose and then disbanded, whereas an army is a funded, organized, and commanded organization by a government. So that's the difference. Try this one, Paula. What is the difference between embarrass and abash?
Ooh. Well, to embarrass someone is to cause them to turn red and feel a little bit humiliated or something of that nature. To be abashed. Abashed is a party. Yeah. Oh, so too.
Abashed is, I thought, to be totally put off and stunned more than humiliated or chagrined.
You're
in awe than red-faced.
Yeah.
To be made shy by something, shy or retiring, to be sort of shut down.
To shut down, I think, is what's going to give you the 10 points.
Yeah,
nice job. That's the real difference.
Yeah.
To embarrass someone is to make them generally feel awkward.
Awkward.
You know, somewhat ashamed, but basically awkward. To abash is to put them to shame, make them feel worthless or inferior, cause them, as you said, to lose their self-confidence and retire.
Yeah.
So that's why you got the 10 points. Very good. And finally, Barry, what's the difference between doubtful and dubious?
Doubtful and dubious.
If something is dubious, it is of questionable origin. Doubtful, it's of questionable
credibility.
Truth or credibility.
Not precisely, no. That's you've got elements of both, but no.
For instance, that was a dubious answer.
Yes.
and I am doubtful
if
about
it will be accepted.
And it's doubtful anyone believes
you.
Doubtful
is to not be convinced, and dubious is to be uncertain of something's origins.
Almost backwards.
Like I said, doubtful. To question something's pedigree, and dubious is to question its veracity.
You know what? Since the score is not in jeopardy here, 10 points. You got all the elements. It's just
doubtful, dubious.
Doubtful simply indicates an uncertainty. You don't know. It's doubtful. We don't know. Dubious indicates that something is not completely true and should not be trusted.
Right.
That is the difference that we got. It was a good game for you guys today. Very hard game and a nice score, but it wasn't enough today. The 84 points for Arnie Reisman's team carries the day. Winners this week, congratulations. That is. Good job. That's all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Lisa Nalbandian and all the good folks at Wisconsin Public Radio, our friends for so, so long. Thanks also to Randall Holper and the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee for being such gracious hosts. Sharon Salkin write the words. Antonio Oliart mans the meters. And Zach Moore is the AP with the get up and go. Once every few weeks, we remind you that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, Milwaukee, for showing up. See you next week. Support for Says You in Milwaukee comes from the good folks at Wisconsin Public Radio and the Pfister Hotel. On the web at Pfister.com. That's Pfister with a P-F.
Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You. Created and produced by Pippin and Finch. Busted.
Nashville Ballet presents the holiday classic Nashville's Nutcracker, celebrating the city's rich history and personality. Nashville's Nutcracker features the Nashville Symphony, 50 Nashville Ballet dancers, and 170 young dancers from the community. This magical performance for the whole family runs December 9th through 23rd at TPAC's Jackson Hall. Tickets are available by phone at 615-782-4040 or NashvilleBallet.com.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.